Welcome to Tampa Bay FM's Synergy Connection, where life as you currently live it can be transformed into the life you've always dreamed of. Understanding your synergistic connections is the pathway to your emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental wellness. Let's begin connecting the dots. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Synergy Connection Show. We're going to be talking about writing books, and the topic today is So You Want to Write a Book. And I have as my returning guest, Jim Lee. He was interviewed with me on a prior show just after the release of his second book, which was called, or is called, Palmetto Sunrise. And it is a touching tribute to members of his family who helped to settle Florida at the turn of the century. And he reminded me that it is a fun read. It's an exciting book if you like to deal with snakes and alligators and rustlers. And it has all kinds of excitement throughout the pages. Jim also has been a writer for the Tampa Tribune and several sports magazines. And he's a fourth generation Floridian, which is very rare these days. I don't think there's too many of you guys around. I don't think anyways.
Not really. I met one the other day, though.
Oh, did you? So before we actually get started with today's program, I want to remind everybody that if you go to synergyconnectionradio.com, there are over 60 shows now that are archived there, and Jim's prior show is there in that list. And you can read the show notes, and that's kind of a synopsis of each of the shows, so you can make the decision whether you want to listen to it or not. Additionally, there is a link to Boomer's products on my website. And Jim and I were talking earlier, and he'll share a little bit of this at the end of the show since he uses the products. But if you don't have your health, I think you would agree that you know the rest of it isn't going to count too much.
Especially as you get older.
As you get older, that's really true. You have to be able to enjoy your life, which means that you can move. And it's not going to come just from the grocery store. It's probably going to come from taking some nutritional products. So for anybody out there that is concerned about their health, maybe you've been diagnosed with being pre-diabetic, or maybe you have a high blood pressure or something along those lines, please click on the Boomers logo. Go in there and read about what their products are all about. I've had Bob, one of the owner, on the show a number of times. And I think he does an amazing job of educating people on the importance of health. So as we get started today, the topic is, So You Want to Write a Book? And we're going to jump right in with, how does that happen? Because everybody, a child, an adolescent, a young adult, an older senior citizen, everybody has a story that probably needs to be told.
That's true. And, you know, I had the story for my most recent book for years. Mm-hmm. And I finally got around to doing something about it because I wanted to leave that to my son.
So that was like a legacy you wanted to
leave?
Yeah.
So he would know more about his former, his relatives. And I really enjoyed writing it, number one, but I tell you what, there's a lot of work to writing.
There is a lot of
and
work.
And if you expect somebody to buy a book, you've got to follow the rules, and there are a lot of rules. There's no set program to write, but there are rules to follow.
I think a good book, in my mind, is one that is like a conversation with the reader. That you have to, it creates a picture in the mind of the reader so that you're there in the action, whatever that action is.
See, that's one of the intangibles in writing a book is creating the picture.
Yeah.
And that helps to make the book, it rounds it out along with the dialogue.
Right. And there's a lot of books, I mean, I've bought them and I'm sure you have, where it sounded like it was going to be a good book while I was standing in the bookstore, you know, glancing through it. And I get it home, and it's just, it's a chore. to read.
Yeah.
Because there's no rhythm to it. There's no sense of the visuals are not there.
Exactly.
And after a little bit, I just go,
I've thrown away a dozen books like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I donate them to the library.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I got rid of them.
Yeah.
And I have other friends that like to read books, too, that I give to, as well as the library.
Right.
But
so, with a book, you know, what you said there's rules. So, what's the very first rule, you know, for writing a book?
Well, like you said earlier, you got to have a story to tell, all mm-hmm. right? But then again, you've got to have kind of a format on how to do it. And there are several things. For an example, you got to dive right into the story and let it develop. You got to dive right in fast and mm-hmm. let it go fast at first. Otherwise, you'll lose your reader.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can continue on from there.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one little hint, you know. But you gotta understand the plot and how to plot. And basically, a plot is if you look at it in the form of a graph. You start at the low end, you go up to the top, and then you go back down.
So it's almost like an EKG.
Yeah, but you build up your anticipation to the mm-hmm. crescendo, and then you solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that may take the whole book to do, mm-hmm. or you may do that on every chapter. That's mm-hmm. what I did. I did it on every chapter. And shorter chapters, the faster the read, mm-hmm. the easier the read.
You know, you and I have talked about Dan Brown's style, that wrote The Da Vinci Code for Angels and Demons, and he has a new book that is set in Barcelona. But his style in every single book is that there's a cadence, a definite rhythm to how he writes. He keeps the chapters, I don't think there's been a single chapter over about 12 pages.
Right.
So you get to the end quickly because you feel that rhythm. And then it's like, oh my God, I've got to find out what happens next. And so you read one more. And you're always reading one more. So his books read very, very quickly.
Because if you don't do something like that, then it gets boring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you lose your reader.
You do.
Yeah.
You do.
But hooks are a thing that you use too, by the way.
And what are hooks?
Hooks are things that, for an example, what does the main character want? And what if they can't get it?
So can you give an example? Maybe in Palmetto Sunrise, what is your main character in that book?
Yeah, that's the first half of the book is my great-grandfather.
And what did he want?
He wanted to move to Kissimmee because he was a young man. He wanted to move from Alligator Town, which is now Lake City, down to Kissimmee River Valley, as they call it that back then. And he was going to round up wild cattle, because back then there was a lot of Spanish cattle that had been turned loose for years and years and years, and were breeding for years, and they're down there just for the taking.
Mm.
And that was his goal. He had a few stumbles along the way, and those are that's the hook when you get to the point where you can't get there. The book starts right off with hold-up people. And highwaymen, as they called them back then, I guess.
Hmm.
And they made an attempt to rob him, but they were prepared for it. And there was three of them traveling, and they all traveled a little bit apart so that they could back up whatever happened.
So if they'd all been together, it might not have worked out as well.
Exactly.
Hmm. So the hook, I guess, in that particular story would be your grandfather wanted to go to the Kissimmee Valley where there were wild cattle. That would
uh-huh.
be there for the picking,
right?
More or less. And then what? He was going to gather all of them up and take them
and
back?
Take them to the, no, he's going to take them to market, which was in the Tampa area. There was a packing house in the Tampa area.
Oh. And then he was going to get money for that?
Yeah.
And then what? He was going to become a cattleman?
He wanted to run his own cattle, and he did, but what he made most of his money helping other people in the area. He would drive their cattle over to Tampa.
Mm.
And he'd get a quarter a head or whatever, you know, for driving them. And so he made most of his money that way. And then he went into the growing vegetables.
Oh, he was into tomatoes.
Yeah, no, that was my grandfather.
Oh, okay.
Although they didn't grow tomatoes back then in my great-grandfather's day, but they grew other things. And they moved down south around the lower East Coast. And they had a big plot of ground down there, and they had some of the local Indians work for them. And it was quite an operation. He got very, very wealthy and retired. And then the First World War came along, and he had to get back in the cattle business because he knew that our soldiers would need
beef. They needed
beef.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was his undoing because the war only lasted about a year and a half.
And he didn't have time to get all the cattle grown up.
That's right. He leased land, bought cattle, and then he was stuck with them. And he had to sell them and dispense with them and whatnot. And he ended up in a ranch-style house down in South Florida.
And Is the house still there?
I don't really know.
I don't even
know where the house was because this was, I met him one time, and I think I was 5 years old or 6 years old, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that he was very tall, and my great-grandmother was very short. And there are pictures of him in the back of my book.
Oh, and if somebody wants to read this story, how would they find your book today?
Oh, you just go on Amazon. It's Palmetto Sunrise, and it's on Amazon. And or you can go to jimleeauthor.com, and you can read some of it there. And that will take you to Amazon, too, to buy them. Or you can contact me.
So there's numerous ways that they can read about old Florida family.
Yep.
Well, that's pretty cool. So I remember when I read it, they ran into a hurricane in part of the book. So that would be why they can't get sometimes what they want.
Exactly.
The elements would come in.
Well, what they were trying to do is find this the bad guy, okay, that was causing all the trouble. And so they went over to the West Coast from Kissimmee to find him and capture him and put him in jail. And he outmaneuvered him and got away, and then a hurricane hit all at the same time. So it was a very interesting part of the book.
And, you know, I mean, weather certainly is a part of why maybe the main character doesn't get what they want.
Yeah, and that's the whole book, really. Yeah. You're always striving for something, okay, but you just can't get there because of things get in the way. You overcome them, but they get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually appears hopeless at the time, too. Of course, you got to make it look that way and then solve it.
So they have to overcome whatever the obstacle is.
Yeah, yeah, and that's part of the plot. If you're plotting each chapter, that's what you do. You overcome that part during that chapter.
Mm-hmm. What if they don't overcome, maybe their main objective is one thing. They meet obstacles, and that prevents them from getting to their main objective. But another gift, if you will, comes out of it. And so maybe the end of the book is a totally different place.
Well, my grandfather is a good example of that.
Okay.
Because he grew up under my great-grandfather, of course, in cattle, but he didn't want cattle. He was a farmer at heart. And so he wanted to grow tomatoes in the Bahamas. And so he and a friend got together, and they went to the East Coast, and there's problems getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one chapter where they were impeded, but they overcame it. And then they got there, and then they were going to sail to the Bahamas with seed and everything they had, you know. And unfortunately, a lot of events happened at that point that stopped them from doing that. So they ended up back in South Florida, which was a good part because that's where he started his tomato farm.
So sometimes the gift comes in as a surprise almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you have this objective, but the objective doesn't get met.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And that's like life.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it is. It is. And then he had got the house all spiffied up and whatnot and had his crop in and decided to go back to Kissimmee and marry my grandmother. And so when he took her back there, they pulled up and they saw this band of Indians parked right in the middle of his tomato field. And that turned into a good thing along the way because he took the high road. He went out and said, "How long do you plan to be my neighbors?" And they said, "Well, we're leaving tomorrow." And he said, "Well, take as many of these red ripe tomatoes with you as you can haul, and they're yours. And in return, I'd like to come and hunt in your area, and you teach me how to hunt your area." And so they said, "Yeah." So they nicknamed him Tomato Jim.
Oh, how funny.
Really. Yeah. This is a true story. Mm-hmm. And he went there and he worked in a dugout canoe, got his boot got struck by a rattlesnake, and all these little things happened along the way, you know, in Florida. And, of course, they captured a huge alligator that really wasn't dead. And that's part of the story, too.
I'm thinking the alligator was in the dugout with him?
Yeah. Yeah, what happened was they shot him, and they had to quickly grab him so he wouldn't sink to the bottom. It was a big gator, and about 12 feet. And so they rolled him up on the shore, and then they tipped the boat down and rolled him into the boat. And then one of them was in front, one of them in the back, but the gator came alive. He wasn't dead. And that's the rest of the story.
So that would be one of the reasons that people might want to read your book, is what happened. Did they live or did they die? My goodness. All right, so let's just say that you're a person that believes that you have a wonderful story that you want to share. Do they need to totally understand the purpose of why they're writing their story? Like, you wanted to share your family and you wanted it to be a legacy for your son. Somebody else might want to write a book about their family recipes that they want to hand down to multiple generations, and in a book it would be easier. Because I know at Christmas time there's a lot of people that...
That's really easy to do, mm-hmm, something like that. It truly is.
Somebody else might want an autobiography of, mm-hmm, how they overcame maybe an illness or something.
Or somebody might want to write a mystery novel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there,
mm-hmm,
are other rules for mystery novels, but, mm-hmm, they also adhere to the regular rules.
But they, mm-hmm, basically need to understand the purpose for their book.
Yep, they got to figure out what it's all about and how to apply everything to it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a learning curve, by the way.
Right, figure out the characters.
Yeah, I have to say that when I started writing my book, I didn't know all this. And I knew a good bit, but as I got into the book, I realized that I would read and I would study about writing along the way, and I'd find something that I'd missed, and I'd go back and fix it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For an example, I didn't really realize that there were two plots, you know. It could be two different kind of plots. One's a whole book, mm-hmm, where the book goes up, gets to the end, and everything's solved, and the book is over. My book, I did that every chapter.
Mm.
And so there's several ways to approach, you know.
And you have to find maybe the best approach for your story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, that's right.
So not everybody's going to have the same layout, let's say,
exactly,
you know, to their book.
Exactly. Depends on the kind of book it is.
Right.
You know.
Do you have to decide the length of the book? You know, because some people might be wanting to write, I don't know, I'm thinking of Chicken Soup for the Soul. We talked about that earlier. And those guys, Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen, they got together to do their books because they wanted to appeal to a huge, huge number of individuals. So they would do Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul and Chicken Soup for the Widow's Soul and Chicken Soup for the Horse Lover's Soul, and, you know, on and on it went. But they were addressing a particular love that somebody might have, and then they would have all of these short stories.
Well, that's
inside.
That's a good and unique way to do it,
mm-hmm,
and that takes. He figured out the combination that worked
exactly.
And but when you get ready to write your book, you really have to know where you're going with it, but you don't have to know how long it's going to be, because there's two ways to do this. You can write a book. You can start a book, and then you can let the book kind of write itself.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or what I like to do, I outline the book, outline the chapters, flesh out the chapters, and then when I write it, I embellish it even more.
Right.
And so your chapter may ramble a little longer or change direction, but it should generally stay in the same venue as the book.
Right.
As you want it to be.
Hmm. All right, so somebody makes the decision that they have a story that they want to share.
Mm-hmm.
And they get their characters together. They kind of have a reasonable understanding of the purpose of why they're writing.
Mm-hmm.
What comes next?
Well, you gotta know the rules that you can't break. Okay,
there are so rules. Where are they going to go get these rules?
Very easy. Internet has a lot of them on there. I mean, you can.
So what are they looking up?
Well, for an example, you'd be looking up scenes. How important are scenes? Scenes are the backbone of the whole book. Okay, and you need to know that.
Okay.
Because
so how to write a scene might be what they would type in, and then
yeah. And also
character development.
Character development, yes. But the end of the book, has to tie all the loose ends together. Everything comes to a crescendo at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. So you need to know the end of the book at some point.
Right.
And
you know, when I was working on my own book, that and you know that it's coming out mm-hmm. in either February or March,
right.
But when I started it, I did the bookends. I had the beginning because I knew where they were from, and then I had the end, and then I built towards the middle.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. There's no, like I say, there's no set mm-hmm. way to write a book.
Right.
But you need to know most of the rules. And by the way, some of them you can get right online from Amazon. Writing Great Fiction is a book. I took the course and I have the book, but you can buy the book on Amazon. And they've got all kind of good stuff on there. And as I was writing the book and I would come to a particular, I'd be reading something about what to do and I'd come to a word and I'd go, what in the world is that? Well, I would Google it and it
uh-huh.
would tell me.
Uh-huh.
There's a word for the ups and the downs and it gets kind of complex, but I don't want to go into that, but you'll reach your own level once you start to study and understand what your book is about and where it's going.
Now, one of the things that we've talked about is you said every chapter has to have movement, and it has to, and your words were to illuminate the character.
Yeah.
So
it has to move the story forward.
All right.
At the same time of illuminating the character.
Okay. So I want you to look at your book because, I mean, that's something
uh-huh.
that you're very familiar with. And so pick a chapter that develop that movement, you know, that you can use as an example that this is what I did to move this particular chapter and to showcase
okay.
this character.
Okay, my grandfather, they got in the sailboat. They found a sailboat. They got the owner of the sailboat, sold it to them, and said, I will even sail you there.
Okay. Where is there?
To the Bahamas, I'm sorry.
Okay.
They were going to grow tomatoes in the Bahamas.
Okay.
Andros Island, okay.
Right. So they go from Kissimmee over to the coast
yep.
and buy
yep.
the sailboat.
Yep.
Okay, so the movement is that they are traveling to get the sailboat.
Right, and then they get there, and then turns out that the owner of the sailboat was actually commissioned to kill my grandfather.
Oh, well, that's not so good.
No, but that moved the book right along, believe me.
Was there an attempt made on his life, or did he
find out
before?
Absolutely.
Okay, so they shot at him?
No. What? But you want me to tell you how the book?
No, not exactly. But I mean, you know, how did he kind of discover that?
Well,
wound?
Here's the thing: they had at the docks. They had met this old guy. He was a friend.
Mm-hmm.
That turns out to be a friend of theirs, you know, and they buy him a bottle of rum. And then they pick his brain about sailing and all this stuff, right?
Make sure that he's
yeah.
got lots of cups.
So they went off doing their thing. And in the meantime, this guy who happened to be the owner of the sailboat, and by the way, he was there in order to get to these people and do them in. And so he started pumping the old man about these guys. So the next time they came back to the bar to see the guy, he told him, he said, there's something wrong with this guy. You have to be real careful. And so they made their plans then that, okay, if this guy's not a good guy, you know, we'll take care of it. And so they took steps and it worked out.
Okay.
To the detriment of the bad guy.
So that would be one of those cases where karma
yeah.
came in and took yeah. care of him.
Well, yeah, exactly, exactly. And as the sun rose from the east.
mm-hmm.
But then they didn't know where they were, and so they had to get, they were still trying to get to Andros, but Little did they know they were going the Gulf Stream had taken them too far north. Then all this going along, you know, because they weren't sailing.
Oh.
And so they headed, and they finally found the island. It was the northernmost island, or Cay, in the Bahama chain. And they met some people there who were fantastic, took care of them, and that's a whole other little story. That was the good part.
Uh-huh.
After the bad.
Right, so it makes sense to me. Like, you know, you resolve. It's like you tell the story, and again, there's that maybe an obstacle or something that they...
There's the hump,
mm-hmm.
and then they resolve it, and it goes back down.
Right, and there's something good that comes out of it, and then they move on to the next step.
Yep.
Because the characters pretty much, I mean, they go from generation to generation, mm-hmm. but they're always moving forward,
mm-hmm.
you know, in their quest for whatever it is they're looking for.
Yeah, and you know, the bad guys still run around out there, right?
Right. Anyway.
And
right.
so my great-grandfather, who was now retired, anyway, he owned one of the first old Cadillacs. It was an open convertible type little car. And I've seen a picture of them. They're really neat. So he was driving from his ranch to town. And this rider steps out in front of him on his horse. And it turns out it's the bad guy. And he's got a gun. And he said, "I should shoot you now." He said, "But I just want to let you know, I'm going to kill your son. You won't know when. It may be 2 years from now. But I'll kill your son. And you know I did it." And so he wheels and goes off and... my great-grandfather reaches in the back and gets his rifle off the floorboard and throws a shot, but the guy's already in the woods. And so it goes from there. He's still loose and still after my grandfather.
Hmm. Now, does that get resolved in the book?
Oh, yeah.
Or is that a future story?
No, that gets resolved.
It does. Okay.
Everything gets resolved.
Okay. I thought maybe you might leave your reader sort of hanging a little bit to see what's coming in a future book.
Well, I had to end it with the bad guy, okay?
Okay.
I mean, I had to resolve that. And actually, my great-grandmother did that. So she took care of the situation, which is kind of interesting. Anyway, I had thought about picking up from there and going forward with mm-hmm. my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different era, though. We're in a different era now, and I don't know if that's going to work or not.
But you're playing with it.
Yeah, I'm playing with it. I'm also playing with three young boys, 8, 9, or 10 years old,
mm-hmm.
romping the woods in the 40s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole nother scene that I'm toyed with, too.
I would think it might be hard sometimes to figure out what's next, you know, because a writer always has ideas. And then you have to eventually focus on, okay, this is the next one that I'm going to pursue. But
the next book?
Or,
yeah. Well, I'm kind of stuck right now, see.
Right.
But also, and when we get into publishing, I'm in the midst of, I'm in a flat place there. And because I've got to hire some people to help publish or advertise my book.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll sell more than mm-hmm. what I've sold mm-hmm. so far.
Well, maybe that's a good place for us to kind of, you know, go into that a little bit, because I know you'll be back again. So with people that are listening today, you know, they realize that, okay, I've got this idea, and they now begin to understand that I have to have the characters, I have to know where the book is going to start, and maybe what the last chapter is all about. They're going to build the suspense in between. You know, they realize, you know, from our conversation so far that there's movement, that each chapter hopefully won't be, you know, 30 or 40 pages long, because you may lose the reader on such
That's
long
right.
chapters.
That's exactly right.
But keeping the pace, mm-hmm. keeping a rhythm to it.
Mm-hmm.
But
see, the rhythm is something that you really need to work on, because that, in my book, doesn't do it all the time. But your book needs to keep a rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Or you want to turn the pages and start the next chapter.
And when you end a chapter, you got to have a teaser for the next chapter.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. That's very true. All right, so now let's just pretend for a minute that we have the book almost finished.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have done that, but for, again, the listener out there that might be trying to figure out, can I write a book? can I do that? Once they have it conceptualized, once they have a lot of it written, and they think to themselves, you know, this has potential, they have several ways that they can look at publishing. They can do self-publishing. They can find a publisher, a small publisher, or they can try to submit it, you know, to one of the larger, through an agent. And agents, just so that any listener out there understands this, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, it was so much easier to get an agent. Agents were out there looking for writers, and they would help you get in front of, you know, a Random House, Macmillan, Barnes, I can't even think of all the different publishing houses that are out there. But there were many, many, many more publishers that were available 30 years ago, 40 years ago than today. Unfortunately, people are not into books as much. You know, the libraries, even some of them, you know, are like part-time libraries now. And we ran into one. We went up to Micanopy, Florida, this last a couple of weeks ago now. And, you know, I mean, this is a little town. It's an old-fashioned town in northern Florida by Gainesville. But I would never would have dreamed that a library, even in a little town, would have part-time hours.
Yeah, and they do.
And, you know, they didn't even open until noon, and it was a very abbreviated
time. Yeah, I wanted
time.
To donate one of my books to them, and I couldn't do it.
Right.
Because we had to leave.
Right. So, I mean, I think you have to look at where readers are today, and a lot of them read on Kindles and Nooks, you know, rather than actually a book in their hands. So some people love the book still. I do. But some people that travel a lot don't want to be lugging books with them, and so they use e-books.
Let's go back to just when you were talking about going to a agent.
Mm-hmm.
You got to remember that agents have to sell the book to the publisher.
Right.
And so the book has to really excite them.
Mm-hmm.
And there are not many of them that do.
Right.
And so that's a hard road to go. And that's why I chose a different route on mine. Because I thought I had it figured out, but I didn't. I went with a smaller publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And she was wonderful. She did a great job for me. But being a small publisher, they don't have the money to promote your book. You still have to provide the money.
Right.
And that's what I didn't understand.
Right. So people that with, well, let's look at each one of these a little bit, you know, so to help somebody that is considering writing their own book. If you decide to self-publish, one of the things that I would certainly encourage anyone to do is to look at what they call vanity press publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that there are any that I would highly recommend at this point in time. The vanity press publishers, the way it works is you have a major publishing house that still has a reputation. They in turn have sold to another publishing house the ability to self-publish. So those individuals, and I'll use Hay House as an example. Hay House is well known by everybody, I think, you know, as a premier book publisher. Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, a lot of, you know, well-known authors are authors of Hay House. But then Hay House sells to another group that is the self-publishing arm. And then the self-publishing arm has people behind them that are selling the packages. And so when you go online and you look at the packages, they may range from $2,500 up to about $10,000. And they will tell you what they will do for you through that package. What they don't say is that you as a writer will still have to market your book. There is very little that they will do in terms of marketing.
By the way, there are other self-publishing houses out there that will publish your book, put it together for you for $800.
Mm-hmm.
But that's bare bones. You get nothing. And then you have to buy your books. And if that's all you want is to see your book in print, mm-hmm. okay, and that's the downside of self-publishing, really. But mm-hmm. the upside is that if you do have a decent book and it does sell, you get to keep most of the money. However,
you lose your rights, though.
Not under self-publishing. I'm talking self-publishing.
No, you still do. If the minute that you, the minute that you sign over to somebody who is editing it for you and everything else,
I didn't lose all my rights.
Unless you own your ES or, you know, your...
I do.
Okay.
Okay. There's two ways. There's more than one way to skin this cat.
Okay. Because normally, the individual who goes to a self-publisher, they buy, you know, the Balboa Presses of the world. They buy the ISBN numbers. And if they buy that ISBN number, they own it.
No, I bought it because I use Lulu.
Okay.
And Lulu is an all computer organization.
That was for your
cookbook.
Yeah.
And I was very disappointed because I wasn't very computer literate to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to, I had a lot of learning to do about to get my book done. But I finally got it done. And yes, I paid for all that. And that was part of the deal because they didn't want to do anything to speak of that you didn't pay for.
Right. And that's, that's true.
Yeah,
they're not going to.
Yeah. And so there's all kind of things they offered that I didn't have the money. You know, $400, $600 here, $800. I didn't have the money to do it at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, I self-published and I sold it myself. I hoofed it around Florida and put it in different, found out that the best place to sell my book, mm-hmm. which was Seafood Legends, was in curio shops and places where women shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold about 400 of them doing that before I realized I needed to do it some other way. So,
mm-hmm.
But it was a learning curve.
Right. And, you know, and I think as both of us writing a book, you know, you've written two. I've got one that I've written and a second one that's coming out. But I think it's important for, again, the listener to sort of understand that owning your own, it's called an ISBN number, and owning, you know, the trademarks of your book yourself is critical if you're going to maintain the integrity of your story. And if you have somebody else publish it for you, they're doing those things for you, and that's part
and
of
lose.
It. And technically, you do lose. Now, you can become your own publisher. It requires a little more work. One of the things that I found out, you know, kind of early in the game here, was that if you want your book in like a Barnes & Noble, and there aren't that many bookstores even anymore. There's a lot of little private ones. But if you want your book to be in a bookstore, they have to be able to look up under that ISBN number and see that it is a publishing house that owns the ISBN number. If it shows that it's self-published and it's your name, they won't even carry your book. And most people have no idea that that is the case. So
that's a good point.
Yeah. So you really do have to kind of do your homework to understand how you want to market your book, how you want to sell your book. I do think it's wonderful to have a publisher that'll go to bat for you and do, you know, a lot of the things that you may not have the time to do or even the ability to do. But just know that if you do go that route, that you may end up not having quite the flexibility that you might need down the road.
Which might not be a bad thing, depends on who you are and what you're...
And what you're writing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, what you're writing.
Actually, now what I plan to do in my book, I'm going to hire a company that does that
the marketing
that markets books, and it's not going to be cheap.
No, and you know, again, having a wonderful legacy like Palmetto Sunrise,
yes.
You know, you wrote it initially for your son, but I've read it. There's been a number of people that we both know that have read it that loved it, and you know, there's at least discussion amongst your friends of, gee, this would make a super Netflix movie.
Yeah, I've heard that several times from several different directions.
Right. So then it's like, okay, how do we make that happen?
And I think the reason is that you can see where the book, you could see the book in your own mind's eye. I was lucky enough to get that accomplished.
Right. Well, I mean, it's true. And you know, if anybody loves Westerns, I think it has that Western.
Yeah, the first half of it is a Western.
Mm-hmm.
Because my great-grandfather was in the early Florida, and Florida was the cow capital, or Kissimmee was the cow capital of Florida for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
Might still be for all I know. But
they had the Longhorns, didn't they?
No. The Bramers.
Oh, okay.
The Bramers.
Okay. Because, I mean, I've seen...
The ones with the hump.
Yeah, but I've seen ones like... Oh, golly. Around Land of Lakes, there's some old farms with the cows that have the really...
Well, those are exceptions.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So somebody just bought them and put them there.
Yeah, and there's some lake over Central Florida that has a setup, a cow camp, and they have longhorns there, and they have what they slept on, and the guy that talks about it is really neat. It takes you back in time, you know.
I think I have even heard that if you want to experience cattle drives, that there are places in Florida that you can sign up and
there's at least one drive, yeah. You got to know about it and probably need to know somebody to get that. But but it does happen.
Well, if you were using a small publisher and you said, okay, I need more help and I don't really want to self-publish and become my own publishing house... and you were going to find a small publisher, what's the best way to find a publisher for maybe your particular story?
Ooh, that's a good question, because you helped me find my last publisher.
Well.
There are publishers around who but you have to find out what their criteria is. Do they offer everything that you need?
Mm-hmm.
Do they offer editing? Do they offer covers?
Mm-hmm.
Do they offer the setup, you know?
Mm-hmm. The layout of it?
Yeah, and that's what a small publisher actually does,
mm-hmm.
okay, if they're a good one. Mm-hmm. And mine, the cover's great.
Yes, it is.
And you pay for all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, but my cover was cheap. I paid $300 for it, and it's a killer cover.
It is a great cover. Yeah.
And then one of the people that she hired, that it works for her publishing company, did the editing.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful job. And all that was really good.
It's a package.
It's a package, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not at all sorry I did that, but it was a learning curve too, because I didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
most of the people that are probably listening have never written a book, and so they're certainly not going to know how to go about doing it and doing it correctly.
Yeah, and you can Google publishers too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you can Google most anything these days. But this publisher did a very good job for me, and I had what I thought was a very fair contract.
Mm-hmm.
I get 45% of the net mm-hmm. of whatever sold,
mm-hmm.
and that's high, okay?
That is very high. If you go with a traditional, with an agent, publishing house,
oh
my goodness, I think the top amount that I've ever seen is somewhere between 15 and 17%.
And usually it's more like 8 to 10.
Yeah, it's 8 to 10. And they're, quite honestly, they're looking for the movie star, the politician,
mm-hmm.
somebody that already has a name and is established. And then they run in and say, yes, write a book for us. And here's $500,000, you know, to write the book, because that person is going to garner them some sort of credibility, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, I'm publishing Hillary Clinton's book. I'm publishing so-and-so's book.
And they intend to make a lot of money on it, too.
Exactly, exactly.
But us little people don't have that option.
No.
So we have to struggle along and pay for what we do.
Right.
And bear in mind, you will pay.
On an average, if you're going to write a book with a small publisher.
Mm-hmm.
Not breaking it out into individual categories, but just looking at the cost from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that it runs somewhere between maybe $2,000 and $5,000 by
yep,
the time you
that's
get...
That's very good. I think I spent about $2,500.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky. I got things cheaper than what seems like to me, better than what they were worth, you know, cheaper than what they were worth.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, my cover, I couldn't have found a better cover.
Right. So the editing, the cover, the layout, you know, dropping pictures in at the correct placement, and then buying the book. I mean, you...
I have to buy the book. Yeah,
you have to buy the book. So every time you buy 20, 50, 100 books, it's your price is less than what it actually sells for. Yeah. But nevertheless, you've got to put the money out up front and then get reimbursed after the fact.
My books cost me about $6 a piece, including freight, and I sell them for $15. Mm-hmm. Now, if you buy them on Amazon, they're $15.75 plus freight.
Mm-hmm.
And
so they can get them for a little less.
Unless you're a Prime, you wouldn't have to pay freight. But,
right.
And I just ordered 15 more, by the way. And
so you don't have to order 1,000 at a time.
No, you don't. But the more you order, the cheaper they get.
Right.
And I'm thinking next time I may order 50, maybe even 100 next time. Because I sell them myself, by the way. And the books that you sell under the contract that I have are mine.
Mm-hmm.
I make the money on it. And if you want to market it yourself, you can do that. And you can make some money on it.
Mm-hmm.
What I did the first year... on my first book is I sold 100 of them to my relatives for Christmas presents to other people. And they were very happy to do that and get one. Well, I couldn't do that on my second book. But marketing, if you want to do that, and if you're happy just to have a book in print and give it to your relatives for Christmas presents, well, that's great. And you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it at a minimal cost, but it's still going to cost you $2,000-$3,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I even last year, I wanted, and mine was not to market it to anybody other than give it as gifts to family members, but my son and I put together a cookbook that was based upon my mother's side of the family. And we're, you know, from Ireland, and so... There were a number of recipes in the book.
Good recipes.
And, So I gave one to you and your wife. But I had pictures, stories, you know, about members of the family and kind of a storyline that went along with each of the recipes. But that even was significantly expensive by the time it was all put together. And I was surprised. I mean... It was a nice Christmas gift, but, you know, by and large, it was several hundred dollars to put that all together. So, yeah, I think being aware of the cost involved for getting the book into print, and then the next step is the actual marketing. And I'm going to tell a little story. Jim and I talked about this, you know, ahead of time. But some of you may or may not know about the story behind The Shack. And, of course, it did become a movie a few years ago. But the author of The Shack wrote a Christmas story every year for his family for years and years. And in this particular case, he had waited until kind of the last minute, and his wife was reminding him that he needed to get the story out. So he sat down, and instead of it being his typical 35 or 45-page short story, it turned into this book that became The Shack. And so he gave it to everybody at Christmas time, who then proceeded, members of his family, gave it to friends and relatives of theirs, and they started getting requests. So he and two friends made the decision that they would pool their credit cards, and they ordered 1,000 books. It cost them about $10,000 to do this. And all of these books arrived and were warehoused in their garage. He thought it would take probably a year or more to get rid of the 1,000 books. It took 6 months. And they had many, many, many more requests. So this time he was able to do it on his credit card because the 1,000 books had sold. And he ordered 5,000. Those books were sold in about 4 months. And then he ordered 10,000, and those books were sold in about 3 months. So he already had 16,000 books that were out there, and this was a self-published author. The last time I looked at his book before it became a movie, it was in something like 50 languages, and 5 million books had been sold. So that can happen too. It's extremely rare. We would love to believe that that would be, you know, Jim's case or my case. That would be awesome. But, you know, it can happen. And so if you have this beautiful concept of a book and you just know in your heart of hearts that it's going to be a bestseller or, you know, something more than just the words on the page, that it's going to be meaningful to people, you know, don't let anybody tell you not to do it. Believe in yourself and believe that your words are important. And I know that's what kept you writing your book, and it's certainly what kept me.
Well, you know, I sat on that thing for several years. And then one day I said, you know, I'm not getting any younger. And I said, I really need to, if I'm going to do this book, I need to get it done. And I did it in a year. Mm-hmm. Once it was. Mm-hmm. And so it'll take you a year.
Yeah, it does.
Because of the rewrites and the things you learn and the things you have to change. And also along the way, by the way, you need somebody to help critique what you write.
Mm-hmm.
Not just grammar or spelling, but somebody that looks at it and says, yeah, that sounds good, you know. And I had my friend Lucy here. She was my confidant for that. And she helped me a great deal with that. And then when I gave it to the publisher, and then they went in and, of course, the guy that did it, he says, oh my goodness, I don't know if I can get this done or not. So he was making his job look harder than it might have been, but did a great job.
Yeah. Oh, and the editing, I mean, is where they really look at sentence structure and they look at punctuation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, those are the kind of things. But he didn't have to do anything for the rhythm in your book. He didn't have to do anything with the creativity was there. The visualizations were there, all of that. So his was structural.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that might have been a little bit challenging.
And by the way, there was a fee there.
Oh, yes, there was. Yes, there was. There was. So, the story itself is, you know, where you begin, obviously, having, you know, the understanding of what it is that you want to convey to a reader. That has to be crystal clear in, I think, the writer's mind. And then it's more scheduling time to write. That's something we haven't talked about. But
That's true.
You have to give yourself, I think, a certain amount of time on a daily basis, even if it's 15 minutes.
But you know what I think? You have to love that book.
Yes.
You have to
yes.
want to get that book out, or yes. you won't spend those
right.
hour a day, or
right.
whatever it
right.
was. Yeah.
It'll you know, you'll always have something else that gets in the way.
This is a story you want to complete.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what drove me.
Well, it's a love of writing. I mean, like, even though I have my book has been edited. It's with the illustrator right now. I know it's going to be available in hardcover, you know, by the end of February, the first part of March. Even though that's done, I'm working on it every week to set up some of the marketing events.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that too prematurely.
No, you can't.
But at the same time, I have a folder. I have two folders going with future books.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll see something, and I have folders on my laptop. I have folders, you know, physical folders in my mm-hmm. office. And I think you do too, you know, with ideas
yeah.
of future books.
Ideas of future books, yeah. I've got probably four mm-hmm. or five. And also, I have a book of writers, or a group of writers, who out of the probably 15, 20 people in the group, there are about four or five who are really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I throw ideas out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we meet on a Wednesday morning, mm-hmm. and it takes, we at 8 o'clock, and we work till noon,
mm-hmm.
or listen to people's books,
mm-hmm.
and critique them.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, you better have thick skin, because they tore me up. But I had a techno thriller, and I had the beginning of it, which I thought was good,
mm-hmm.
but then they showed me the error of my ways.
Right.
And so
that's a good thing.
And then it's a good thing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because yeah. you don't want to go off on the wrong end and get into the book, and then you find out that it started wrong.
Right. Because then you put a lot of hours and energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I want to get back to one thing before we close our show today, because I mentioned to people in the very beginning that I would love for them to understand that if they don't have their health, you know, they don't have a whole lot else going for them. And if you go to
true.
SynergyConnectionRadio.com, you're going to see the Boomer logo. You can sign up for their, they have a health newsletter that's free, and you can sign up for that. You can click on their link and go in there and read about different products they have, watch videos, look at the Trustpilot reviews. Their website is very extensive and valuable for people trying to figure out how to get healthy. But I'm used their products.
I'm going to give you one better, okay? Because I've used this product, these products actually, for 3 years. And when I first started with the products, I was in bad shape. I've been on a prescription that gave me 20 side effects. And within 4 months, 19 of them were gone. My blood pressure normalized and so did my cholesterol. Now, fast forward 3 years. I just had my blood work done 2 weeks ago. My blood work is perfect. And so is my blood pressure and cholesterol. And I'm 83 years old.
Which is amazing.
And it is because of the products.
Yeah. And really I think as a person, I don't know, a lot of people begin to develop health problems in their 40s, but certainly by the time they're 60.
Yeah.
A lot of doctors expect for you to be on 2 or 3 or more prescription drugs.
Let me give you a little insight. One of the products, one of the two main products, it gives you thousands of metabolic enzymes. It gives you all of your 8 essential amino acids at the same time every day. It detoxifies you. And it also cleans out your little villi down your stomach that do the absorption of your nutrients.
Right. So you could be eating great food and never get any of it absorbed.
And the other big part of it, the other one, the sister product, is 70 synergistic nutrients. And that was invented by a group of health doctors originally.
It was out at UCLA, wasn't it?
I think so.
Where they invented it.
Yeah. And, but you talk about a good combination of things, and I was lucky enough to have somebody to say, hey, you should try this. And so I did.
Now, the two products you're talking about that you use are?
The Boomer Boost and the Boomer Barley.
Okay, and the Boost is the vitamins and minerals.
There's two kinds of barley. If you're a diabetic, you want the Gladiator barley, or if you're a weightlifter, you want the Gladiator barley, or swimmer, or whatever. But everybody else, regular Boomer barley is fine.
Okay.
The difference is the amount of protein in it.
And they need more protein if they're fighting an illness.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. And also, if you're on the whole, it comes in a kit. And so you have a whole kit of several different items. And I just, you know, Google BoomerBoost.com and you'll be able to see everything.
Right, right. Now, what I have told people that are listening to the show is if you click on it through my website, and again, that's SynergyConnectionRadio.com, if you click on the Boomer logo there and then decide you want to try any of those products, if you use my name, Lucy, L-U-C-Y, in the promo code, then you're going to get $5 off of each and every order that you make. So it's not a one-time only. It's every time you decide to order something, you're going to get $5 off. And I know that this company runs regular sales. They have a Black Friday sale, I believe, that's coming up. And so if you go to their website, who knows what you're going to see that might be on sale that you would want to try. But you'll always get the $5 off just by typing in Lucy on the promo site.
Oh, did I tell you about my wife? Maybe she, you know, 2 winters ago, she would start to go to work and it was still dark, right? And she would get a mile down the road and get sleepy. So one of the products that they had is called Siltep, and it's mostly public speakers like it because it sharpens them, you know, wakes them up.
Okay.
Well, I bought her a bottle. And she says, I don't have that problem anymore because I'm wide awake.
That's good, especially, you know, well, now it's daylight a little bit sooner than it was.
Yeah, yeah.
But still, you know, I think going forward in the fall back.
It's darker at night now.
Right, it is. It is. Well, it has been fabulous having you as my guest.
Thank you.
You'll be back on with me, I'm sure, in a few months, and we'll continue talking about how books can be written. Don't give up on your dream. Always remember that somebody is going to want to read your story. And it's just a matter of deciding how to get that story out there.
And if you like the idea of that book, go to jimleeauthor.com. Yep. Or Amazon.
Go to Amazon. But your and the name of your book one more time is?
Palmetto Sunrise.
Palmetto Sunrise. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Go out there and make it a fabulous weekend. And always remember to make it your very best life. Thanks so much. See you next week.